information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
To border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Some terrorist thing just to steal some money out of Congress?
Their arrest was only the beginning.
We are being lied to by
a government who knew they were innocent.
They have no idea what they're up against.
We're setting the stage for when we come out of this for a massive inflation holocaust. Welcome, my friends, to episode 95 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. It's October 10th, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and Revere Radio Network. So, yes, inflationary holocaust, Goldman gangsters and bankrupt banksters, NSA, TBS, OBL, and the Delta Force, the debt clock, Endgame, Palin hack, and Corsi in Kenya, plus tons more that we're going to cram into this big episode 95. It's October 10th, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato, and this is MediaMonarchy.com.
Cracks peel back and hell bends the room, and the devil gestures to you. You've never seen such a Beelzebine, and he's telling you to make up your bean on what's left of your evening about whether to flake out or feckin' stay out. What does you make of this doubt? The devil wants to know if you're going down or up. Easy, I know what my speech should be. Devil beams a big beaming grin, the sort which leads you up the streets of sin. He holds up paperwork, sign the line, let's clash with madmen, crime is fine. It sounds all hectic, you're having cold feet, things are out of hand, you make embarrassed retreat. Let's ride the Valkyrie, commit a bit of sin, turn rock to rubble, punch it in the chin. I simply, Lucifer, refuse to wind up on fire with lowlife liars. Then you're destined for the world without chores and sweating, the eternal hell of boredom in heaven. You tell the devil no in certain terms. You'll never be evil, you'll never be turned. What is this evil, and who decides this? When left to devices, some humans try shit. This is a reason we should all be tied up. We're just normal people exploring our minds. We don't go round here putting poison in wine, but we enjoy what we like, which is not always right. People are intricate, people aren't swines. Let's screw the rules up and rely on our minds. Sign on the line, you sign on the line. He clutches the wine and tips in cyanide.
Yeah!
while I don't agree with the sentiment, I sure love his music. That's brand new music from The Streets. A nice pasty white, limey, named Mike Skinner. The new record is called Everything Is Borrowed, and I believe that's the first single, Heaven for the Weather, and that's got to be sampled from something. From what? I'm not sure. So, my friends, welcome to episode 95 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James M. Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Coming to you October 10th, 2008 from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 Pacific Time and every Sunday night at 7 Eastern Time from revereradionetwork.com, the worldwide home of free speech. And again, always big thanks to KBFR in Boulder and 87.9 Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta for rebroadcasting the show. And thank you for hitting me up on MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, and Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And of course, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org for the podcast. Speaking of the podcast, the B-side of episode 94, I just posted up late last night. Usually I've been trying to do on Monday or Tuesday, but, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. So, one more thing on the personal note, speaking of life. Tonight, I believe, will be my final graveyard shift at the store that I work at. So, after 2 years and 2 months, I will finally be going to days, and I'll be able to sleep at night like a somewhat regular person. However, I'm not really like a regular person, so we'll see how it goes. It could be a whole hell of a lot better. But we gotta figure out the problems before we can get a whole lot better, a whole hell of a lot better. So let's turn in our songbooks, my friends, to page MediaMonarchy.com. We got a lot of important news to hit this week. Things ain't getting a whole lot better, but first, like I said, at the top of the page, episode 94B that I posted up last night. So you grab that up, please, and thank you. But let's get into the dirt. First one from Paul Joseph Watson. Global bankers have unleashed inflationary holocaust. Legendary investor Jim Rogers warned during a CNBC interview this morning that global central banks are creating the environment for an inflationary holocaust by their ceaseless overprinting of currency, a measure that isn't even successful in stabilizing the stock market. Rogers said that the only solution to the market crisis was to let failing banks and speculators go bankrupt and stop pumping endless amounts of liquidity into the system, labeling it outrageous that responsible investors and taxpayers are being made to bail out the crooks on Wall Street. Now remember, it seems that all wealth and gains are privatized, but all debts are socialized. Rogers said, quote, "The way to solve this problem is to let people go bankrupt."
Jim, of course, a legendary investor. Jim, can I start off by asking you why you think the equity markets are not responding to the stabilization plans that are being introduced around the world at the moment?
Because they're absurd. Jeff, we have people, if I had come on your show every week for 100 weeks in a row and everything I said to you was wrong, would you keep me on your show? Would you have any confidence in me? Would you listen to me? Mr. Paulson, Mr. Bernanke, and the guy at the New York Fed, Tim somebody, every week they have been dead wrong. Why would you listen to them? I wouldn't listen to them.
Jim, but we are where we are, and I think our audience would love to know from you what you're actually doing with your money right now, because you obviously will be seeing some opportunities here. I'm sure you've kept some of your own powder dry, but maybe you could give our audience some advice as to how Jim Rogers is allocating his capital.
Well, I have an enormous amount of cash, and I've been using it to buy more Japanese yen, more Swiss francs, more agricultural products. I mean, there's a liquidation phase going on, Jeff, where everything is being liquidated. I bought agriculture last week, and it's down this week. You know, they're selling everything in sight. But that's what I covered some shorts. I covered a few shorts here today. That's what I'm doing with my money now.
Jim, at some point this has got to end, right? And at which levels in the markets would you start thinking, you know what, companies look cheap enough for me right now to get back into equities?
I'm not sure I want to buy equities when the market caves in. I don't think equities are going to come out of this on top. Normally when you have a panic, the way you make money is you buy the things where the fundamentals have been unimpaired and they will lead the market coming out. Most equity, I mean, Morgan Stanley is not coming out of this unimpaired. So I'm buying commodities. Right? Commodities are the only thing I know that are coming out of this unimpaired where supply and demand is still terribly out of balance. And the Japanese yen and the Swiss franc.
There's a real feeling, at least here in Asia, of helplessness, watching what's being done in the financial markets here, the wealth destruction that's happening through no fault of their own, the Asians seem to feel, because this was a problem that was primarily a Western financial system problem. But Asia is not immune to this.
I happen to agree with you. I find it outrageous that anybody has to step in and bail out a bunch of 29-year-olds driving Maseratis. What about all the people in countries that minded their manners, saved their money, didn't get overextended, and now all of a sudden they're being asked to bail out a bunch of guys on Wall Street who were incompetent at best and some of them crooks? I find it outrageous. But by the way, even if it's not outrageous, the way to solve this problem is to let people go bankrupt. All of this pumping money into the system is not going to save it. You see what the market is saying. The market says, we don't buy that. Let people go bankrupt, then you will hit bottom, and then you will start over. The people who are sound will take over the assets from the people who are unsound, and we will start over. This is the way the world has worked for a few thousand years.
Sounding like that crazy Ron Paul guy, you know, talking about sound money. And of course, yes, this can't go on. It will have to end. That's Jim Rogers on CNBC this morning, Inflationary Holocaust. Now, that's the first bit of news on the new financial world order, but it won't be the last on this 95th episode of Media Monarchy. But we're going to jump now to Police State USA, mass arrests, FEMA, SAIC, drills, My Key, and more. First, this from Alternet, and still the news keeps spilling out from the police state RNC from several weeks ago. Incredible footage of mass arrests in St. Paul, newly released footage, which was buried to avoid confiscation, shows riot cops arresting and abusing a giant group of people for nothing.
Other than just people being upset about not being able to get to work and not being able to get to the show, there was no sort of protester confronting the police other than, you know, verbally. But they slowly started to surround us. And I think everyone stayed calm up to a point because, you know, we knew that we hadn't done anything wrong. No one was really even holding signs. No one was really even demonstrating. We were all just hanging out. And then just basically out of nowhere, the police tightened in and everyone kind of getting nervous at this point. And they get on the bullhorn and they say, ladies and gentlemen, you're all under arrest.
Are you serious?
I'm seeing families and, like, you know, kids with University of Minnesota shirts and, like, you know, kids are bobbing their head to hip-hop like, what, are you kidding me? And at that point, no one really believed it. You know, like, no, okay, yeah, we're under arrest. But then as they started slowly moving in, it became real clear that this was a mass arrest and that they were going to arrest people without any probable cause, without witnessing any sort of crime other than hanging out in the park.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're all under arrest. Get used to those words. But let's jump now to a new article from Wayne Madsen. WayneMadsenReport.com. FEMA sources confirm coming martial law. Wayne Madsen Report has learned from knowledgeable Federal Emergency Management Agency sources, FEMA sources, that the Bush administration is putting the final touches on a plan that would see martial law declared in the United States with various scenarios anticipated as triggers. The triggers include a continuing economic collapse with massive social unrest, bank closures resulting in violence against financial institutions, and another fraudulent presidential selection that would result in rioting in major cities and campuses across the country. And you can hit that link and read the whole new article from Wayne Madsen. If you'll remember way back, I think it was maybe even episode 1 of Media Monarchy, if not perhaps episode 2, where Wayne Madsen was in Portland, and it was right before the 2006 congressional elections. You remember the ones where we put those Democrats in? They said they were going to end the war and impeach the president? Yeah, that was the one. But let's move to threat level over on Wire.com. And again, more news on this has been bubbling out in the last several weeks. Maryland cops put 53 nonviolent activists on the terror list. Maryland State Police placed the names of 53 left-leaning political activists into federal and state databases, labeling them as terrorists, the state's police chief admitted Tuesday. Evidence that the state police had been infiltrating anti-war and anti-death penalty groups first came to light in July, following a government sunshine lawsuit filed by the ACLU on behalf of a prominent peace activist named Max Obuszewski. That's Obuszewski. SAIC, our good friends in the private military industrial complex, they're the ones behind the top-off drills that have happened in Portland last year. SAIC awarded $254 million contract by the Defense Intelligence Agency, and this is a press release from SAIC themselves. Science Applications International Corporation announced it has been awarded a contract by the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, to support the National Media Exploitation Center, NMEC. The contract has a 6-month base period of performance, 4 1-year options, and a total contract value of more than $254 million if all options are exercised. Work will be performed primarily overseas. Now, the NMEC, again, that is the National Media Exploitation Center, provides strategic document and media exploitation support to the intelligence community, law enforcement, and the DOD. Under the contract, SAIC will provide linguist translation and transcription, media and document exploitation, and related support services. Quote, we look forward to helping this important customer provide timely, objective, all source military intel to policymakers, warfighters, and force planners to meet current and future challenges, said John P. Hines Jr., Senior Vice President and Business Unit General Manager of the Private Military Industrial Contractor, SAIC. If we jump to a new one from Kurt Nimmo over on truthnews.us, the NRC report misses the point. Government surveillance is about control, not about phony terror. According to a report released by the National Research Council, with a link for you, automated identification of terrorists through data mining or any other mechanism, quote, is neither feasible as an objective nor desirable as a goal of technology development efforts, end quote. Inevitable false positives, writes Declan McCullough for CNET News, with a link for you, will result in ordinary law-abiding citizens and businesses being incorrectly flagged as suspects. McCullough writes that the report, quote, amounts to at least a partial repudiation of the DOD's controversial data mining program called Total Information Awareness, which was limited by Congress in 2003. TIA, however, was not put out to pasture by Congress, as the former Clintonite Peter Swire admits, quote, I believe that Total Information Awareness is continuing under other names, end quote, he told Democracy Now! Reuters obtained a congressional report that revealed 9 months after Congress allegedly shut down Total Information Awareness, the U.S. government continues to comb private records and databases. Boy, howdy, and we will get into more of that in a little bit when we learn about what the NSA has been up to. Now, if we jump to the BakerCountyPress.com, this is out of Florida. And you know, if you're a listener to MediaMonarchy.com, we cover the terror drills. Not only are they expensive and psychologically damaging, but they sometimes provide the conduit to go live. God forbid terror drill at a Florida high school. Baker County High School was the stage for a carefully orchestrated school shooting exercise back on September 13th, one that officials hope never actually happens. It was designed to test the response from law enforcement, school faculty, the fire department, and rescue should students or others ever open fire during the school day. The mock scenario began when two teenagers, armed with an assault rifle and pistols, emerged from the main office and fired on the school's student resource officer and students from the courtyard opposite the media center and cafeteria. The response included patrol deputies, a special response team that was called in after one of the gunmen took hostages in the cafeteria, and medical personnel who treated the wounded. Quote, you can talk about it all day long, but being there and doing it is a very different level of preparedness and awareness, Superintendent Paula Barton said shortly before the drill began. It's as close to the real thing without it actually happening, God forbid. And of course, the exercise was managed by the Emergency Operations Center Director Adam Faircloth, with assistance from a division of URS Incorporated, again, private to military industrial contractors, and they provide emergency preparedness planning services to communities across the country. And of course, it was funded with money stolen from you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Stupidity. This was one I saw actually in our own Borregonian here. Ford launches MyKey parental controls for cars. Now, of course, it's supposed to remind you of MySpace. And this from techradar.co.uk, or rather techradar.com. Ford has launched a parental control system for its cars with the MyKey system, checking young driver's speed, safety, and limiting that damn stereo volume. MyKey will enable car owners to limit the top speed of their car to 80 miles per hour, limit the upper level volume on their stereo, and make the car sound a continuous alert if passengers are not wearing their seat belts. Optional warning tones can also be sounded if the car goes faster than 45, 55, or 65. But you can still go up to 80. And this is just another new bit of technology that, on the one hand, sounds good in the beginning. Oh, well, that sounds reasonable. But of course, it's the slippery slope. And pretty soon it'll be for everybody, and not just teens. We know full well that Mothers Against Drunk Driving not only want the breathalyzer to start, you know, convicted drunks' cars, but they want them for everybody. It's for everybody. Again, it starts out being about the terrorists, but it's actually about you. If we hit up the Deep Background blog on MSNBC, our good friends from Microsoft and General Electric, FBI warns of potential terror attacks on public buildings. Now, of course, needless to say, they have no specific intel, but they decided to put out the threataganda anyway. The Department of Homeland Stupidity issued an analytical note to U.S. law enforcement officials cautioning that Al-Qaeda terrorists have in the past expressed interest in attacking public buildings using a dozen suicide bombers, each carrying 20 kilograms of explosives. Authors with the U.S. Office of Intelligence and Analysis, added that they have, quote, no credible or specific information that terrorists are planning operations against public buildings in the U.S. Again, that didn't stop them from issuing the threataganda. The DHS analysts, after coordinating with the FBI threat analysis unit, said they were releasing the note because, quote, it is important for local authorities and building owners and operators to be aware of potential attack tactics. According to that note, obtained by NBC News, a, quote, recently discovered audio recording of Al-Qaeda training sessions conducted several years ago provides instruction to potential suicide terrorists on seizing a publicly accessible building and damaging or destroying it with explosive charges. If we move to WCCO.com, were arrested RNC protesters terrorists? Again, back to the police state Republican National Convention in St. Paul several weeks ago. They pretended to throw firebombs at cars and buildings, met in training camps to talk about guerrilla warfare, kidnapping and bomb making, drew up maps detailing possible targets. The eight people arrested ahead of the Republican National Convention say they were just exercising their protest rights, but each faces a felony charge accusing them of advancing terrorism, raising questions about who qualifies as a terrorist under state law. Prosecutors say the defendants created fear in an attempt to keep delegates from attending the convention. Civil rights advocates and others say prosecutors are misusing a statute that defines terrorism too broadly. It's no small distinction. The defendants face up to 7.5 years in prison if convicted. Political demonstration that turns rowdy or violent may involve criminal activity, but to call it terrorism is losing all sense of perspective, said Jamil Jaffer, director of the ACLU's National Security Project in New York. Quote, the government is pushing the envelope. They certainly are. If we move now to globalresearch.ca, Homeland Security's space-based spying goes live. I believe we may have just scraped the surface of this in recent episodes. While America's attention has shifted to the economic meltdown and the presidential selection between corporate favorites John McCain and Barack Obama, the Wall Street Journal reported that the Department of Homeland Stupidity's National Applications Office, NAO, quote, will proceed with the first phase of a controversial satellite surveillance program, even though an independent review found the department hasn't yet ensured the program will comply with those pesky privacy laws. So, as noted back in June on globalresearch.ca, and again by Tom Englehart of Anti-Fascist Calling, and that's antifascist-calling.blogspot.com, as he noted back in June, the National Applications Office, NAO, will coordinate how domestic law enforcement and quote-unquote disaster relief agencies, such as FEMA, use satellite imagery intelligence, IMINT, generated by U.S. satellites. Based on available evidence, hard to come by since these programs are classified above top secret, the technological power of these military assets are truly terrifying. Something else truly terrifying that's gotten a lot of coverage, the story has legs, as they say, with a lot of people writing in letters to the editor, again, at our local Warrigonian. Everybody's all up in arms about a little DVD called Obsession. And so on last night's episode of 94B, we played a little clip of Keith Olbermann talking about the Obsession DVD, basically sent out in a bunch of newspapers distributed by the millions. It's called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. It's a fear-mongering anti-Muslim documentary. Now, again, you got to go check out the Olbermann clip. He, of course, blames it all on Bush and Cheney. It's all them. They came up with all this stuff. And as soon as we get Barack Obama in, everything's just going to be peachy keen, right? This from Daily Kos, you know, headed by that guy who was with the CIA for a little bit, Marcus. But here's a good one, and this is from a blog. Of course, it never made the front page of Daily Kos, but I digress. Pepper sprayed mosque after Obsession hits Ohio. On Friday, September 26th, the end of a week in which thousands of copies of Obsession, the fear-mongering anti-Muslim documentary being distributed by the millions in swing states via DVDs inserted in major newspapers and through the U.S. mail, were distributed by mail in Ohio, a quote-unquote chemical irritant was sprayed through a window of the Islamic Society of Greater Dayton, where 300 people were gathered for a Ramadan prayer service. The room that the chemical was sprayed into was the room where babies and children were being kept while their mothers were engaged in prayers. This, apparently, is what the scare tactic political campaigning of John McCain's supporters has led to. Americans perpetrating a terrorist attack against innocent children on American soil. Now, when the election gets stolen from Barack Obama, as we'll cover in just a little bit, I'm sure we'll see the same thing happening on the left side, but it'll have left cover. If we jump to the AFP, U.S. court overturns convictions of two Yemenis. A U.S. federal appeals court in New York has overturned the convictions of two Yemenis who were tried on charges of supporting al-Qaeda. The second, U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals overturned the convictions of Sheikh Mohammed Ali al-Moyad and Mohammed Zayed, that's Z-A-Y-E-D, who had been sentenced to 75 and 45 years in jail, respectively. Following the ruling, the two men who were arrested in Germany in 2003 and extradited to the United States were put under the jurisdiction of another judge and could be retried. The appeals court said al-Moyad, 60, and Zayed, 34, were convicted of financial support for al-Qaeda and the Palestinian group Hamas based on, quote, highly inflammatory and irrelevant, end quote, testimony of third parties who unfairly influenced the jury. now, I believe, have it bookmarked but not posted up yet, of course, how they've had to basically throw out everything related to the quote-unquote liquid terror plot in the UK. That won't change anything here. Your grandma will still have to dump out her water and you'll have to take off your shoes because it's not about terror. It's about fucking control and training you to be a fucking little slave, bitch. Take off your fucking shoes. I'm an undertrained TSA thug. I'm going to take your fucking laptop. Oh, you don't like it? You look a little huffy? Why don't you walk through our machine that shows your naked body? Why don't you look at our biometric scanner that seems to note that you look a little distressed? You seem a little mad that undertrained thugs are making your grandma dump out her water and groping your girlfriend. It's about control. If we shift now into money, murder, meetings, meltdowns, and more, again from the AFP, the French agency press, economic 9/11 exacting grim psychological toll in the U.S. The murder-suicide of a Los Angeles financial manager who shot dead five members of his family before killing himself has highlighted the psychological toll of the economic meltdown. The bodies of Karthik Rajaram, R-A-J-A-R-A-M, Karthik Rajaram, a 45-year-old business school graduate, and his wife, three children, and mother-in-law were discovered in his home in an upmarket gated community. In a letter to police, Rajaram said he had been driven to murder because of his dire economic situation. Already unemployed for several months, his remaining finances were reportedly wiped out by Wall Street's collapse. Rajaram's tragic case has become a grim symbol of the U.S. financial crisis. Or as L.A. Deputy Police Chief Michael Moore put it, a perfect American family destroyed by a man stuck in a rabbit hole of absolute despair. A perfect American family destroyed by a man stuck in a rabbit hole of absolute despair. Dark poetic words from a Los Angeles Deputy Police Chief. The L.A. case came less than a week after a 90-year-old woman in Ohio shot herself as she was about to be served an eviction notice on the home she had lived in for the past 38 years. So these two harrowing incidents have drawn attention to the mental health impact associated with the most serious U.S. financial crisis since the Great Depression. We, of course, always need to look over to dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. And you can get all the latest financial terror updates over there. So there's a link for you. But we're going to now jump overseas to the Telegraph. Bush to summon leaders to emergency finance summit. And I believe we're looking at that this weekend. G7 and all that. World Bank banksters. In an effort to shore up the world's battered financial institutions, President Bush plans to summon global leaders to an emergency economic summit. As the Federal Reserve effectively loaned billions of dollars in banks in another bid to unfreeze credit markets. The Fed's move, which is putting tens of billions of dollars worth of taxpayer money at risk, is the latest desperate attempt by the U.S. government to open up the global financial system and avert a full-blown deep recession. Bush underlines the message personally in conversations with other world leaders, the London Times reported. Bush, Brown, Sarkozy, and Berlusconi have all spoken with Bush by telephone. All of them have agreed to a meeting if details can be worked out. In the meantime, Bush urged his European counterparts to coordinate efforts to solve financial crisis spreading around the globe. On a good note, not to exactly take glee in other people getting punched out, but can't really blame people. Lehman CEO got punched in the fucking face. This from Consumerist.com. Dick, it wasn't my fault. Fold, that's F-U-L-D, the CEO of bankrupt investment bank Lehman Brothers, with a nice photo of him being heckled after testifying on Capitol Hill, was apparently punched in the face while working out in the Lehman Gym on the Sunday following the bankruptcy, this according to CNBC's Vicky Ward. Fold testified before the House Oversight Committee, blaming everyone but himself for Lehman's collapse, an attitude that prompted Ward to confirm reports that he'd been punched in the face and to side with the attacker. Quote, from two very senior sources, one incredibly senior source, that he went to the gym after Lehman was announced as going under. He was on a treadmill with a heart monitor on. Someone was in the corner pumping iron, and he walked over and knocked him out cold. And frankly, after having watched this, I'd have done the same thing too. So I believe there's the line from the classic film Friday that says, "You got knocked the fuck out!" So maybe we'll see more of that. People line up to buy gold in Britain. That's from Cryptogon.com. But we're going to jump back here from Think Progress and MSNBC and CNN and others. The U.S. debt clock has grown too big for the national debt clock in Manhattan.
How big has the national debt become? So big it's threatening to outgrow the landmark national debt clock in New York City.
We had to squeeze everything together.
The national debt just passed $10 trillion. So the clock's caretakers had to squeeze one and the dollar sign into the same square.
Pretty scary. Pretty big number.
Incomprehensible. It's too big.
The clock was put up in 1989 by Helena Durst's grandfather, when the national debt was just under $3 trillion. The clock was briefly retired for 2 years, from 2000 to 2002, because the clock couldn't display a declining number.
Thanks to the Clinton administration, enabled to reduce our deficit and our debt.
However, when the debt started climbing again, the clock caretakers had to erect a new clock to tally the bill.
And also highlight the amount debt that each child is born into this nation, which is about $30,000.
Passersby are troubled by the number.
The Federal Reserve balance sheet is going to be just as risky as all the banks are saving, because they're taking on all this stuff.
Others are more optimistic.
I think we'll be able to handle it. We've got a strong economy. We'll walk through it. Just got to have a strong stomach.
Now that the debt has passed the $10 trillion mark, Durst likes to recite a poem by her grandfather.
Borrow, borrow, borrow. Enjoy today and tomorrow, for tomorrow is going to be terrible.
They are already planning construction of a new sign in case this one is outgrown completely. Ted Chaffrey, The Associated Press, New York.
Tomorrow is going to be bad. Now, again, it is important to note that back in September 2000, during President Clinton's last year in office, the national debt clock had the reverse problem. It was shut down because it started ticking in the opposite direction, shaving off roughly $30 a second. So we also, again, have from DailyDoseOfTerror.blogspot.com, America Sinking, New World Order from Meltdown, question mark. And a very big question mark at that. If we move to ABC News, though, this, of course, got lots of headlines. After the bailout, AIG executives tried to head off to a nice resort in California. Less than a week after the federal government committed $85 billion to bail out American Insurance Group, or rather, is that what it is? AIG Insurance Group International, American International Group, which right there shows you it ain't American. It's international, baby. It's globalism. Executives of the giant AIG insurance company headed for a week-long retreat at a luxury resort and spa, the St. Regis Resort in Monarch Beach, California, with a link for it. You can go ahead and book a room there yourself, or try.
One of the most spectacular corporate downfalls that Betsy mentioned had been AIG. And today, former executives of the insurance giant were on the hot seat on Capitol Hill, being blamed for the company's crisis. The government bailed AIG out last month with $85 billion in loans. But as Brian Ross reports, AIG executives were living it up right after getting the lifeline.
1 week after taxpayers bailed them out, AIG executives treated themselves to a week-long trip to this luxurious resort. The St. Regis Hotel and Spa at Monarch Beach, California. Just back from the brink of bankruptcy, AIG spent $440,000 on oceanfront rooms, rounds of golf, and more than $23,000 for the resort's spa and salon.
They were getting their manicures, their facials, their pedicures, and their massages, while the American people were footing the bill.
The hearing also revealed that at the very time the two AIG executives were publicly assuring investors of AIG's public health, they had been warned by their own auditors and federal regulators of serious problems brewing. That's the kind of thing that put the executives of Enron behind bars.
Yes, it is, my friends. And there is a good update from thinkprogress.org. So when the heat came on about this first retreat, they kind of backed off. But then they tried to do it again. but now they've basically been called out. AIG cancels post-bailout party in Cali and says it won't do it again. Something important to note, and the Wall Street Journal doesn't exactly spell this out for you, but it's pretty much there. Read between the lines. You know, the financial panther Suze Orman? Did you know she's on the payroll of the FDIC campaign to blame you for the financial crisis so she can go on Oprah and other television shows and wag their finger at the American people because it's you bear some of the blame for taking out those loans from predatory lenders. Lenders in the temple, my friends. Let's jump to dailynewscaster.com. And it's, again, interesting to note, and it's really bizarre. In years past, you used to have to go to, you know, InfoWars or Rents or Coast to Coast or those kind of places for those salacious conspiracy theory headlines. But now, it's basically the revelation of the method. It's all coming about right now. For it all to basically go forward, cards have to be shown. They have to be put up, face up, on the table. So as things become more known, things become more apparent as the fucking nose on your face, you start to hear all regular people on TV and news start to use words like New World Order, One World Government, Endgame. And so here's the latest from cowardly, bastardly Glenn Beck, who of course likes to have it both ways, plays the right card and keeps well-meaning conservatives in line, but he also likes to throw out things like Endgame and New World Order and One World Government.
You and I grew up in is gone, and maybe it's gone forever if we don't wake up now. McCain said last night, was anybody stunned by, I want to buy up all the bad mortgages so there would be no foreclosures. As outrageous as that was, bad news for you, gang, that's already in the bailout bill. Believe it or not, Paulson can do that. He doesn't have to even ask you anymore. There is a global meltdown coming. It is a global depression, and one world currency and one world financial system is the end game. China said last week they want one global currency. France said yesterday or the day before that they want one world order, a new world order, at the end of this event. Two nights ago, the government used $900 billion of your money to give loans to businesses and guarantee those loans. Did they even ask you? That's your money. Last night, for the first time, the interest rate was cut globally.
And of course, it's not China calling for the New World Order. We know that it's Bush and Clinton and Bush and Brown and Hart and all of them and Kissinger. But again, we're now into the revelation of the method. It's all coming out. So if we hit up another one from Paul Joseph Watson, bankers want world economic government to solve the financial crisis they created. So again, I digress. It's all problem, reaction, solution. They cause the problem to get the reaction from you so that they can give the solution that they wanted in the first place but didn't have the political capital to do it. Whether it's burning down the Reichstag or blowing up the World Trade Center or crashing the stock market. It's all about you begging them for help. They're like the vampire. So again, there's all these thoughts and all the fear and paranoia, again, which is somewhat correct, that there are fucking combat brigades that have now been assigned to the states starting October 1st. And we're going to get a little more into that. But I don't think we're going to see the wake up one morning and tanks are going to roll down the street. They're going to make you beg for it, baby. Back to the article. Paul Joseph Watson. Bankers want world economic government to solve the financial crisis they created. The world's central bankers are gathering this week at the IMF World Bankster Conference in Washington, D.C., and are expected to grease the skids for the creation of a machinery of world economic governance under the pretext of preventing a repeat of the financial crisis, a global economic policeman to patrol a de facto financial dictatorship. Bilderberg member and recently appointed UK Business Secretary Peter Mandelson argued last week that new global solutions are needed because, quote, the machinery of global economic governance barely exists. It's time for a Bretton Woods for this century. And of course, the Telegraph notes that opinion is now hardening around the case for a new global architecture to enforce rules that ensure lessons are learned. You're going to learn your lesson, all right. Last bit of headlines posted up under the money murder meeting meltdown and more, posting on MediaMonarchy.com. There's a nice cartoon from SinFest.net. Damn, it feels good to be a bankster. And it's got all your favorites like Scrooge McDuck and the Monopoly guy. You know, that's pretty much based on J.P. Morgan. Nice little comic strip for you to check out. Russia's stocks plunged by nearly 20%, their worst daily loss ever. That's from Canadian Press. Someone put together a nice little video about the collapsing U.S. economy. You can check that. Financial dictatorship coming to America. That's from LouRockwell.com. A look at Wall Street's shadow stock market. That's a video from CBS News. The Fleecing of America by Stephen Lindman is up on globalresearch.ca. A nice video from Brass Check about the day Americans went broke. And it's not about 2008, it was about 1929, which, as we noted on last night's episode, Jon Stewart noted that 1929 was for pussies. Shock and awe, bipartisan Beltway terrorists launch economic 9/11 on the American people. That's from Chris Floyd and Empire Burlesque. It's all your fault, the economy is going down the tubes. That's from Infowars.com. And we have also got a little bit from our man Lyndon LaRouche, noting what I originally thought it to be is the threats that some of the congressmen spoke about, Burgess, Capture, Sherman, about being under martial law and being threatened if they didn't pass the rescue bailout bill. And I thought LaRouche was talking about they'll kill you, meaning the banksters will kill you if you don't pass this bill. However, that's not what he's talking about.
Now, the danger here, of course, is that you're going to have a French Revolution problem, as I said, inside the United States. You now have, and some of these idiots, and even my friendly friends out there, who say, please, please be cautious, let this bill go through so they won't shoot us. That's what they're saying. They're saying that behind the Bush administration, there are people who would actually use U.S. troops to shoot down people who want to put the holes this bill. That's there right now. That is reality. And that's what some of these questions are reflecting. There are people in high places, including some very high-ranking people in terms of their background, who agree totally with what I say about this stuff, but they won't fight because they say, you'll be shot. We don't want to go into a death camp. Well, if we go into a death camp because we do this, the world will never forgive those who do it. And the world will never forgive those who capitulate to this. Anybody who's smart is not going to take on the American people in that fashion. You're not going to shove a dictatorship down the throat of the American people. They'll kill you. They'll kill you. And they can. Learn the lesson of Vietnam and a few other locations. They will kill you, and they can, if you make them angry enough. And you're about to make them very angry. The reason you're getting such a peculiar behavior in the House of Representatives' background is because the people out there who are behind the people who voted against this bill, those people out there are ready to kill. Not because they're killers, but because they see the destruction of everything that life means to them is threatening them. They've seen a lot of it. Step by step, they put up with it. They've accepted it. They crawled for it. They said, we have to get along. We have to get along. The time has come when they know that everything is being taken away from them, and that was too much. You're going to find the rage against the White House and against the Senate in particular is going to escalate in ways during the coming days of this week and next week in ways beyond anything you most people believe. I can see it right there. It's there. It's coming.
Scary words from Lyndon LaRouche, someone who would probably know something about angry people-powered groups. And that whole video is up there. You can check it out. Last couple things on money murder meltdown meetings. Lehman creditors want to investigate J.P. Morgan. That's from businessweek.com. And, of course, the House passed the old bailout rescue bill 263-171. That's from thinkprogress.org. Wachovia dumped Citigroup and agreed to merge with Wells Fargo. That's from McClatchy. Now, of course, Citigroup is angry, and they went in on it. And finally, again, from alternet.org, will Wall Street meltdown turn America into a police state? And again, even as we say, it's the revelation of the method. It's all coming out on the table. Don't be fooled into thinking this is all just being created right now. They set it all up in advance and then announce it to you. They're not building it right now. It's here. They didn't write the Patriot Act on September 12th. We're soaking in it. Let's move to ABC and the NSA. NSA agents admit spying on Americans. ABC's Brian Ross talked to National Security Agency agents who admit spying on phone calls of Americans that have nothing to do with terrorism investigations. Did you get that? Nothing to do with terrorism investigations.
This is the first time any of the actual intercept operators, the people who listen in and record phone calls on behalf of U.S. intelligence agencies, first time any of them has come forward. Now, President Bush says they only listen to Americans if it involves Al-Qaeda. These two say not true.
This is a satellite photo of the largest electronic spy operation in the world. A facility at Fort Gordon in Augusta, Georgia, run by the NSA, the super-secret National Security Agency. It is a place where two former intercept operators say Americans are being spied on during phone calls to and from the Middle East.
Personal phone calls of American officers. Of American officers, mostly in the green zone, calling home to the United States, talking to their spouses and sometimes their girlfriends, sometimes on the same days, sometimes one call following another. And co-workers of mine were ordered to transcribe these calls.
David Murphy Falk was a Navy Arab linguist assigned to the NSA facility at Fort Gordon until a year ago.
And when one of my co-workers went to a supervisor and said, sir, these are personal calls. The supervisor said my orders were to transcribe everything.
We were listening to Iraq.
Those were the same orders Arab linguist Adrian Kinney says she got from her army commanders at the same NSA facility from 2001 to 2003. Kinney says she listened to hundreds of Americans simply calling their families.
Americans in the Middle East calling home.
Oh, most definitely. Like personal, private things with Americans who are not in any way, shape, or form associated with anything to do with terrorism. It was just personal conversations that really nobody else should have been listening to.
And you were.
And we were.
But the law is very specific, and President Bush has reassured Americans again and again.
It's a phone call of a Al-Qaeda, known Al-Qaeda suspect, making a phone call into the United States.
I would say that is completely a lie. I would call it a lie because we were definitely listening to Americans who had nothing to do with terrorism.
Kitty says she intercepted, recorded, and transcribed conversations with the military, journalists, and Red Cross and aid workers.
Did you just pull the plug and say we shouldn't listen to this?
I wish that I had, but I didn't.
And former intercept operator Folk says some highly private calls were passed around like office jokes.
And at times when I was told, hey, check this out. There's something really, some good phone sex, or there's some pillow talk. Pull up this call. It's really funny. Go check it out. And you would listen. It was there, stored the way you look at songs on your iPod.
That number would get passed around. You listen to this call. You'll hear some phone sex. You hear some pillow talk.
Right.
And you did.
Yes, I did.
How do you feel about that?
I feel it was something that people should not have been doing, including me.
In a book on the NSA to be published next week, investigative journalist James Bamford recounts the stories of the two former intercept operators turned whistleblowers.
This is the most secret operation in the U.S. government, and that we're doing this strictly for one purpose, and that one purpose is to catch terrorists. And what it turns out to be is for a more prurient reason, listening for the sake of listening and then laughing at what has been collected.
In a statement, a spokesman for the former head of the NSA, General Michael Hayden, now the head of the CIA, the spokesman says the NSA assiduously follows the law and that any suggestion General Hayden sanctioned or tolerated illegalities of any sort is ridiculous in its face.
It is certainly ridiculous. and there is a little bit of a silver lining. So here's the update this morning from the New York Times panel to study military eavesdropping. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator John D. Rockefeller IV, said Thursday that the committee would investigate claims by two military eavesdroppers that they routinely listened in on private phone calls from American military officers, aid workers, and journalists stationed in Iraq. Mr. Rockefeller, Democrat of my home state of West Virginia, called the accusations extremely disturbing. Anytime there is an allegation regarding abuse of the privacy and civil liberties of Americans, it is a very serious matter. So, the two former intel officers, the aforementioned Adrian and David, spoke Thursday to ABC News. You just heard that clip. They were also interviewed for a book on the NSA by James Bamford, a former ABC producer and author of two earlier books on the agency. That would be The Puzzle Palace and another one that I can't remember off the top of my head. However, I should note that we covered just last week the two agents that weren't allowed to talk to Bamford for the PBS special that also ties in with his new book coming out next week. Remember the headline? Agents denied the chance to tell the truth about 9/11 on PBS. So the article goes on to basically repeat what you just heard, that they were told, hey, check this out, there's some good phone sex. So they're spying on everything, and of course, remember Mark Klein at AT&T. But let's move now to Selection 08. Debates, deportation, hacks, raids, and more. So first, we had round two of the WWF stage match, Obamacane. So this first from Danger Room on Wired.com, Obama and McCain wage counterinsurgency. So again, speaking from a couple days ago, last night's debate was supposed to be all about the economy or about who had the scummier friends, but more than a few rounds of the showdown in Nashville were devoted to military matters, specifically on how best to wage a counterinsurgency in Afghanistan and Pakistan. No talk of Iraq at all, my friends. Remember, it's all about Pakistan next. If the Brzezinski puppet Barack has his way. John McCain repeated his call to broadly use the Iraq blueprint on the Afghan front, saying, quote, "Now, General Petraeus had a strategy, the same strategy, very different because of the conditions and the situations, but the same fundamental strategy that succeeded in Iraq, and that is to get the support of the people." That's working out really well. Obama didn't sound all that much different. Surprise. He put a bit more emphasis on pouring more troops into Afghanistan, quote, "because our bases and outposts are now targets for more aggressive Taliban." He talked about, quote, "eliminating some of the drug trafficking that's funding terrorism, just some of it, the only kinds that fund the other guys, but the military and the drug running that funds our military and our economy very much so for the last several decades will, of course, remain untouched." And he said that Afghanistan's political leaders had to be brought into the process. You're going to have to blah-bitty-blah, Obama said. In essence, both Obama and McCain were quoting from the military's now famous counterinsurgency manual, with a link for you to army.mil, which talks about the people being the center of gravity for these sorts of campaigns. These sorts of campaigns, I should note, are, of course, illegal occupations. But I digress again. The old-style bombs and bullets operations have their place, of course, but the key to stabilizing a country is allowing the people to lead normal, social, economic, political lives, as McCain noted. It's certainly a far cry from the debates of 2000 when then-Governor George W. Bush said, quote, "I don't think our troops ought to be used for what's called nation-building. I think our troops ought to be used to fight and win war. I think our troops ought to be used to help overthrow a dictator when it's in our best interests." Doesn't sound like a far cry. One could even argue that the debate represented a kind of capstone victory for the U.S. military's cadre of counterinsurgency-focused thinkers. For years, they've been clashing with the armed forces' more traditional strategists who think the future of conflict lies in big wars with conventional adversaries. In the debate, both Obama and McCain passed up on the chance to declare a new Cold War with Russia. They were too focused on the insurgency in Afghanistan and Pakistan to bother. And again, as we've noted a million times, Obama's string puller, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the man who created Al-Qaeda by funding the Mujahideen in the late 70s in Afghanistan against Russia, doesn't want to fuck around in the Middle East. He wants to go for Russia. Read the grand chessboard. And wake up from your slumber. But of course, they're both puppet bastards who control nothing, but you can tell them by the company they keep. So if we jump to newsbusters.org, McCain, of course, linked to Iran-Contra, Nazi collaborators, and right-wing death squads. On Tuesday, an Associated Press article featured on MSNBC.com and briefly as a top headline on the popular internet homepage MSN.com was titled, quote, McCain linked to group in Iran-Contra case. The subtitle read, organization had ties to former Nazi collaborators, right-wing death squads. The article attacked a group founded by retired U.S. General John Singlaub, S-I-N-G-L-A-U-B. The U.S. Council for World Freedom was part of an international organization linked to former Nazi collaborators and ultra-right-wing death squads in Central America. The group was dedicated to stamping out communism around the globe. Of course, the same communism that's funded by the same banksters that fund everything else. The AP appears to be getting its story tips from the Obama campaign, as Boston Globe Deputy National Political Editor Foon Ree reported, quote, the Obama camp today is sending around reports on Singlaub, founder of the U.S. Council for World U.S., or rather for World Freedom, which was involved in the Iran-Contra scandal during the mid-1980s and was criticized for supposed links to Nazi collaborators and right-wing death squads in Central America. The AP article justified reporting on the tenuous McCain connection by explaining McCain's ties are facing renewed scrutiny after his campaign criticized Barack Obama for his link to a former radical who engaged in violent acts 40 years ago. So that goes pretty deep, my friends, because when you start looking into John Singlaub, who was a member of the OSS, the forerunner of the CIA, and so then you're connected to folks like Alan Dulles and Wild Bill Donovan. And then you're connected all the way up to Iran-Contra and drug running and arms and hostages. And then they're mentioning, of course, now this comes from Newsbusters, which of course is a right-wing site. So they're basically saying, oh, well, it looks like the AP's getting their talking points from the Obama campaign. All this shit is fair game. McCain is a Keating 5 criminal. And the note of Obama's links to a former radical who engaged in violent acts 40 years ago is, of course, William Ayers, member of the Weather Underground. And, of course, most of these supposed radical groups were foundation funded. They get money from MacArthur, Carnegie, Rockefeller, you name it. And they think that, oh, I'm really pulling something off. I'm taking money from the man, but he doesn't know I'm doing bad stuff. They know exactly what the fuck you're doing. Pressure from above, pressure from below. They fund both sides. Phony left-right paradigm. Let's jump to the timesonline.co.uk. Jerome Corsi, anti-Obama author, detained in Kenya. A leading American neoconservative author has been detained by immigration authorities in Kenya as he tried to launch a book smearing Barack Obama. Jerome Corsi of Swift Boat Veterans for Truth fame was being held after failing to reckon with Obamamania. He had been planning to launch his book entitled Obama Nation, Leftist Politics and the Cult of Personality, before traveling to one of Nairobi's slums to donate money to the senator's half-brother George, who was found living in squalid conditions 2 months ago.
An American author of a controversial book about Barack Obama has been kicked out of Kenya. Kenyan officials say Jerome Corso was leaving the country on an evening flight to London. Obama's father is from Kenya. Obama is wildly popular in the African country. Corsi's book is called The Obama Nation, Leftist Politics and the Cult of Personality. Corsi accuses Obama of seething with black rage and being unfit for the presidency. The book also brings up innuendos and false rumors that have already been debunked. Obama is considered a son of the soil in Kenya. Kenyan officials say they kicked Corsi out because he didn't have a work permit. He was in the country at the request of Christian missionaries and was supposed to file daily dispatches all week. The Obama campaign had no comment on Corsi's deportation from Kenya. It's previously called him a bigot. Corsi previously wrote a book attacking John Kerry. He was the 2004 Democratic presidential nominee. Matt Friedman, The Associated Press.
Now, if you really want to dig into the dirty Obama past, there are better ways to do it than Jerome Corsi's book. And of course, you should check out both of Webster Tarpley's new books, Obama, The Postmodern Coup, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. That, of course, being from the man who wrote the unauthorized biography of George H.W. Bush some dozen years ago. But now that he's attacking the guy you like, you won't like him. He's a right-winger. He's a Pied Piper. Let's keep moving. Although, I should note, as I'm getting carried away with my angry sidebars here, that we're now into hour number two of episode 95 of Media Monarchy. It's October 10th, 2008. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time, revereradionetwork.com. Staying on the presidential selection tip, isn't it quite interesting that the son of a Democratic operative has gotten busted for hacking into their supposed opponent's email? Tennessee student indicted for hacking Sarah Palin's email. This from Threat Level. David Kernell, K-E-R-N-E-L-L, looks like Colonel. David Kernell, the 20-year-old Tennessee student who has been under suspicion for allegedly obtaining unauthorized access into Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's private Yahoo email account, has been indicted by a federal grand jury in Tennessee. According to the Justice Department spokeswoman, the grand jury returned the sealed indictment Tuesday afternoon, and Kernell turned himself in to the FBI, after which the indictment was unsealed. Kernell was arraigned in Tennessee, and a tentative trial date has been set for December 16th. Kernell, who is the son of Tennessee Democratic State Representative Mike Kernell, is indicted on only one felony count of violating the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, but the indictment mentions an additional statute, the Stored Communications Act.
First day, though, and new at noon, a UT student has been arrested and charged with hacking into Governor Sarah Palin's email.
20-year-old David Kernell made his first appearance in court this morning. Volunteer TV's Gordon Boyd is live downtown in Knoxville with this developing news. Gordon?
Allison and Bob, you got to figure this was a surreal experience for a 20-year-old UT student. Surrendering yourself to federal marshals this morning, walking into court about 10 o'clock, should I say shuffling into court, in handcuffs and leg shackles, only to leave an hour and a half later, free to go back to class, free to go back to a college life, only after agreeing to more than a dozen conditions. David Kernell, as you heard, charged with unauthorized access to email, specifically that 3 weeks ago yesterday, prosecutors allege, he hacked into Vice Presidential nominee Sarah Palin's private email account by changing the password, that he read some emails, posted them on a website along with the new password so that other folks could hack into it. If convicted, that could get him 5 years in prison, $250,000 fine, and 3 years supervised parole. Still, he is free until his tentative trial date, December 16th, provided he has no contact with Governor Palin or her family, no contact with any other case witnesses regarding the case, which could be complicated because some of those, quote, case witnesses are his roommates and friends. He can't use the internet except for class assignments or to check his own email, and he can't leave East Tennessee unless the court okays it in writing, which means if he wants to go visit mom and dad for Thanksgiving, he's got to get a court okay to do so. David Kernell didn't say anything when he left court this morning, obviously mindful of his lawyer's advice and the judge's admonition, and anything he does say could be used against him. He's due back in court, as we said, December 16th. What does become interesting in all of this is the way prosecutors phrase the indictment, which is posted the emails and the passwords so that others could view it. What isn't clear is whether others will be charged in the case. We asked that question specifically. We really didn't get an answer. Much more, obviously, to go through, and we will, of course, be working on that in the coming days.
Another update from Threat Level is that Kernell was also involved in another computer intrusion case years ago. But now let's move to the Washington Times. This, when I bookmarked this story, the headline was one thing, and when I was posting it up, it had changed, and they had a little correction. So originally it was FBI raids Obama's friend's home. But now, the editors note, the original version of this article has been corrected. The office of Larry D. Walsh was not raided. So now it's just FBI investigates Obama's friend. The FBI is investigating a former Illinois state senator who is a poker-playing buddy of Obama. According to Chicago gangster authorities, the FBI visited the offices in Joliet, Illinois, of a Will County auditor to ask questions about Larry Walsh, a longtime friend of Mr. Obama's and his chief of staff, Matt Ryan. Mr. Walsh, who served in the Illinois Senate from 1997 to 2005, was endorsed by Mr. Obama in his county executive election bid. With the support of some of Mr. Obama's U.S. Senator volunteers, he easily defeated incumbent Republican Joseph McCann, M-I-K-A-N. Will County Auditor Steve Weber confirmed that his office has been asked by the FBI to assist in an investigation, but he did not elaborate on the specifics. Two FBI agents out of Chicago reportedly spent more than an hour in the Will County offices. So again, who's got the scummier friends? Let's get a little positive, and let's get a little breath of fresh air, and let's listen to Ron Paul discussing Obama's quote-unquote change.
Yes, you mentioned the word change, and when I brought your book, I mean, that was the question I have. I mean, we've been hearing change from Obama. If you could confront Mr. Obama tomorrow, how would you pin him down when he uses that word change?
Well, I probably wouldn't do it directly as much as I would go to his supporter if I was addressing supporters of the audience. That change means nothing. It's just a word, and it's a cliche. It's just to repeat it has no meaning. You have to say, what are you going to change? And I would argue, you offer no change. You have the same foreign policy. You want more troops in Afghanistan. You're not talking about only going to war with a declaration. You don't want to deal with the monetary, financial crisis in this country. You want to keep, you know, the system together for the benefit of the banks and the big corporations and the politicians, you know, that argument. And what kind of change do you have on social policy? Do you care about sick people using marijuana? I mean, have you come out for that? You know, and I would just hit him hard on the fact that he doesn't want change. He wants the status quo. And just saying it means nothing, but he has a lot of supporters. And the one time I was asked about to comment about him, I actually tried to be, you know, fairly soft on him, but concluded that we have a lot of differences. But I tried to acknowledge that his supporters and my supporters have a lot of overlap, and they do. So in declaring what I just said, I think it has to be done in somewhat of a diplomatic manner and then to appeal to reason and say, look, if you want change, what you need is somebody that's going to make sure you're never going to have a draft and we're going to bring our troops on, we're going to balance the budget, we're going to have sound money. He never talks about any of that. Well, no, he probably doesn't have real solid beliefs. He will be converted when we convert his young people. That's what we'll convert him. The politicians in Washington don't have much philosophy, probably never will, but that's all right. That's why we have a chance by converting people's hearts and minds, and that's where we've made our progress.
Exactly. So there's Ron Paul speaking about the phony change that Barack Obama offers. And again, as I've said, he's a cipher, but he's more than happy to absorb the change in the things that you want that you're projecting onto him. Now, another important note from Ralph Nader, who will actually be here in Portland at the Baghdad Theater on October 20th. We'll see if we can get some recording action for MediaMonarchy.com, but from VoteNader.org, Nader challenges Obama and McCain to visit a mosque. Ralph Nader held a news conference last Friday, October 3rd, outside the Grand Mosque Islamic Center in Washington, D.C., where he challenged Obama and McCain to visit a mosque, just like they have churches and synagogues, before the election as a show of respect and tolerance. So Nader recently wrote a letter to Obama and McCain asking the men to act on such a request, writing, quote, "As you know, discriminatory acts against Muslim Americans have soared in recent years. They emanate from stereotyping, ethnic profiling, bigotry, and unfortunately actions by some local, state, and federal officials. The documentation is broad and deep on this unfortunate situation that spreads fear and anxiety among millions of Muslim Americans. Out of respect for the Muslim Americans who have served in all the dimensions of our society, from the professions to the armed forces, from the trades to the arts and sciences, from blue-collar to white-collar work while raising their children to surpass their own achievements as befits the American horizon, we urge you to visit a mosque before November 4th. And you can hit up that whole letter up on votenader.org. And again, it's always nice to stretch out a little bit and get a little bit of comedic distance. So we've got another great piece from the Onion News Network. However, this one's kind of fucked up, and I felt kind of compelled to point big flashing red arrows in a way that say, this is satire, this is the Onion, this isn't real. Gunman kills 15 potential swing voters.
We're getting new information on a story we first reported several hours ago, the mall shooting in the crucial swing state of Iowa. Let's go now to Jack Bergen in the War of the White House bunker for an update. Jack.
Thanks, Andrea. Earlier today in Des Moines, a single gunman opened fire in the Woodview Square Mall, leaving at least 15 potential voters dead and over a dozen more seriously injured. Now, at this point, we can confirm that four of those killed were Democrats and seven were Republicans. Six of the dead were not of voting age, so not of consequence here.
So the Obama camp has got to be excited about the outcome of this mass killing so far.
Well, as of now, certainly looking good for the Democrats, but three bodies have yet to be identified.
Okay.
And police are still searching the mall for anyone who may have crawled off bleeding and died in some nook or cranny.
So how long will it be until we can tally the final results of the shooting?
Andrea, hang on a second. I'm getting an update right now on two of the unidentified victims. Okay, it's the young married couple who was shot in the chest multiple times outside a KB toy store.
Were they registered?
No official word yet, but apparently, while paramedics were trying to revive them, they discovered Obama buttons pinned to their bloody garments.
Finally, a little red sunshine for the McCain candidate.
Got some momentum back.
And what about the young pregnant woman shot in the head inside Banana Republic?
Well, witnesses reported seeing her praying during the shootout.
Oh, really?
Leading some to believe she was a church-going conservative.
Okay, Jack, let's look at the broader picture here. What about the family members of the victims? Will they still vote?
We've been polling these family members all morning, but so far the results have been inconclusive.
Okay.
In fact, among family members we spoke with, only 4% were leaning McCain, 7% for Obama, while 89% were crying incoherently.
How will I vote? I'm not sure. I can't really think about it.
Now, let's talk about the biggest wild card here, the shooter himself.
Right. Okay, he's a registered independent.
His name
is Jeff Frauwein. He was shot in the neck by a mall security guard.
Okay.
But he could still cast a ballot if he regains consciousness and votes absentee from the hospital before his court date.
Yeah, the candidate begun vying for Frauwein's vote.
You know, just before committing suicide about an hour ago, Frauwein's longtime girlfriend mentioned that the killer had been planning to vote Democrat this year. After that news broke, the Obama campaign launched a special section on their website where supporters can donate money to pay for the best medical care to keep Frauwein alive.
Interesting strategy.
But the McCain camp is not giving up. The director of McCain's Iowa campaign office made this statement shortly after. Let's take a look.
Mr. Frauwein, John McCain has always been a staunch supporter of the rights that are important to you, like the right to own a gun. If you're not still in a coma come this November, we hope you'll vote John McCain for America.
The McCain camp clearly not ready to concede this bloodbath to Obama.
Well, this election season's taught us that things can change in an instant, Jack, so there's still plenty of time for McCain to catch up.
Right, and tomorrow there could be a dorm fire in a liberal arts college.
Right.
A tornado might pass through the black section of Cedar Rapids.
Well, I'm sure McCain has his fingers crossed. Thanks, Jack.
Fucked up satire from The Onion. Gunman kills 15 potential swing voters. And I think that's our last bit of Selection 08 news, at least for the moment. Now let's move to a man we've been covering a lot recently on MediaMonarchy.com, and that's former CIA operative Robert Baer, B-A-E-R, of course, the focus of the film Syriana, and of course, who has publicly questioned the official story about 9/11. When asked about bin Laden on Fresh Air on NPR, he says, of course he's dead.
Let me just back up a little bit. You slipped in there that you think bin Laden is dead.
Of course he's dead.
What do you mean, of course
he's
dead? Hiding someplace in that no man's land between Afghanistan and Pakistan, no?
Where are the DVDs?
Bin Laden wouldn't dye his hair. I mean, all these things can be manipulated, as you know. Voices can be manipulated. We can take this recording, and you could change everything that was completely opposite of what I said. Your technicians can do this. He hasn't shown up. I've taken, in the last month, a poll of CIA officers who have been on his trail. And what astounded me was not a single one was sure he was alive or dead. In other words, they have no idea. I mean, this man disappeared off the side of the earth. That has never happened before in my years in the CIA. And as long as we're at it, when in history has a country fought a war against another country or another entity where the leader may be dead? Which leads us to the third question, are we fighting the wrong war in Afghanistan and soon in Pakistan? And I come to the conclusion we are.
Because?
There's no definition of victory. We could move into the tribal areas in Pakistan and take hill by hill and turn over every village and still not find Bin Laden, and someone's going to say, well, he's moved to, you know, to eastern China or Tajikistan or some in a neighboring country, and we're not going to know. So this could be an eternal war if the goal is to capture this man dead or alive.
I regret that we're out of time. Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you to cheer me up after all of the kind of bad news you've been delivering.
The cheering up is that there is a solution to the Middle East. Olmert gave it this week. We can give the West Bank back. We can give East Jerusalem. We can rope in Iran into the state of nations. We just have to open our eyes and see what these people want. Olmert did, so let's do the same thing. And it is, the Middle East is solvable in that sense. And we can come home from Afghanistan, and we can come home from Iraq. So, I mean, actually, you know, dealing with the facts doesn't sound too pleasant, but at the end of the day, it is a message of hope.
Bob Baer, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Robert Baer, the author of the new book, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. He was a CIA operative from 1976 to 1997.
Baer also warned that the war is shifting into Pakistan, a dangerous precedent that could see the vaguely defined conflict move anywhere. Last July, it was revealed that Pakistan has an agreement to allow CIA-operated Predator drones to fly over the country and strike targets in the so-called hunt for Bin Laden. Since that time, many strikes have taken place, killing lots of civilians in the process. In addition, details of a secret Pentagon plan to send U.S. special forces into the wild tribal regions of Pakistan to find Bin Laden have also emerged. The plans have reportedly not yet been implemented due to White House infighting. And you can check out the whole interview, click in the link, or you can also just grab that clip you just heard. Of course, the flashback to not very long ago where Robert Baer was saying that a strike on Iran would cause a, quote, serious depression. And it's interesting to note, too, in the last few clips we've played with Robert Baer, usually has the talking head newscaster going, oh, God, you're depressing me. I can't sleep at night. Cheer me up. So, Robert Baer, lots of mixed messages, seemingly right on so many things, seemingly wrong and misdirecting on so many other things, but always interesting and always important to take a look at what somebody like Robert Baer is saying. Let's move now to a grand love affair. It fills my heart with joy. They've been together for a long, long time, and their relationship, I think, really has never been stronger, and they look to be together for a long, long time. And it's the media and the military still in love after all these years. First, from the FBI themselves, from FBI.gov, they've got a nice little press release. From fact to fiction, giving writers an inside look at the FBI. Imagine you're a writer working on a film or television script about the FBI, but you really know very little about us beyond what you've seen in other movies or TV shows. What do you do? What do you do? For decades, you've been picking up the phone and calling us. Every year, in fact, we get calls from hundreds of writers, directors, and producers seeking our advice and guidance. We are happy to help with a link for you to their fact about working with the FBI. We are happy to help because we understand that the entertainment industry plays a key role in educating the public about our mission to keep the nation safe from terrorists and criminals. And we know that the more educated people are about the Bureau, the more likely they will help us solve and prevent crimes and terrorist attacks. So there's the FBI giving an open hand for writers and producers and directors to work with the FBI, as we know happens very, very, very many times. I know just off the top of my head, director Tony Scott is no stranger to the military, whether it's Enemy of the State or Top Gun. He always works hand in glove with the military-industrial complex. But a nice little update from USA Today, from something we hit quite a long time ago. Well, it was April. Seemingly a long time ago. FCC probes role of military analysts in war-related broadcasts. This from USA Today. Federal regulators are looking into allegations that a number of military analysts failed to disclose their ties to the Pentagon when they appeared on TV to discuss the Iraq War. This according to U.S. News and World Report. In its letter signed by the chief of the Investigations and Hearings Division Enforcement Bureau, with a link for you to fcc.gov/EB, Enforcement Bureau, the FCC suggests that TV stations and networks may have violated two sections of the Communications Act of 1934 by not identifying the ties to the Pentagon that their military analysts had. The Wall Street Journal says an FCC spokesman confirmed the letters but wouldn't otherwise comment on the investigations, which appears to have grown out of a New York Times report that said the Pentagon was using former commanders and current contractors to influence public opinion. And that flashback link is there for you, going back to April of this year, behind TV's analysts, Pentagon's hidden hand. And a couple others that you can check out. Going way back to the early days of MediaMonarchy.com, Operation Hollywood, and there's also a nice documentary up on Google Video, Hollywood and the Pentagon, A Dangerous Liaison. Looking abroad yet again and jumping back to the French agency press, the AFP, Ukraine's parliament dissolved. Now, we made mention of course, the sort of foundation-funded color revolutions. So we're going to jump to the Ukraine, the home of Yushchenko's Orange Revolution. Ukraine's president, Viktor Yushchenko. Remember the guy that got poisoned and his face is deformed from it? Ukraine's president, Viktor Yushchenko, on Wednesday announced the dissolution of the parliament following the collapse last month of Ukraine's pro-Western coalition government, saying, quote, "In conformity with the Ukrainian constitution, I halt the parliament's powers and announce parliamentary elections," Yushchenko said in a televised address to the nation. The government collapsed in September after Yushchenko's party pulled out in protest at Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko's, the surprisingly cute Ukrainian prime minister, with a link over to her blog. It's nice and pink and pretty and frilly. Sorry. The government collapsed in September after Yushchenko's party pulled out in protest at Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko's decision to support a bid by the pro-Russian opposition to reduce the president's powers. Under the Ukraine's constitution, the president can dissolve parliament if a new government is not formed within 30 days of the previous one collapsing. An interesting incident that initially didn't have much coverage. The only bit of news was coming out of Iran, where the incident took place. So I was a little skeptical at first, but of course you bookmark it and check back 6 hours later, and there it was, confirmed from the Associated Press and others. Another Iranian incident. Pilot says U.S. officials were on the intruding NATO jet. But Iran says intruding jet belonged to NATO, not U.S. First from the Belfast Telegraph. And we'll try and sort all this out. A jet that violated Iranian airspace and was forced to land in an airport in Iran belonged to NATO, Iranian TV has reported. That's Press TV. Iran's media claims the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, one of their Falcon jets carrying military personnel from various nations, including Hungary, was heading to NATO bases in Afghanistan. The plane reportedly took off from Turkey and then strayed into Iranian airspace on September 30th. Iranian fighter jets escorted the aircraft to Tehran's Mehrabad Airport and forced it to land. So then, the confirmation and the update from the Associated Press. Iran says it forced down Western plane. Iranian news reports claim Tuesday that Iran forced down a Western aircraft that accidentally entered its airspace, then allowed the plane to continue to Afghanistan after questioning its passengers. The state-owned Al-Alam, A-L-A-L-A-M, Iran's official Arabic-language television station, quoted an unidentified senior Iranian military official as saying the plane belonged to either a British or Hungarian relief agency and had been traveling from Turkey to Afghanistan. White House spokesman Gordon Jandro said, quote, "We're looking into the various and conflicting reports coming from the Iranian news agencies, but do not have any information at this time that would lead us to believe they are correct." The U.S. military's Central Command, CENTCOM, said in a statement from its headquarters in Doha, Qatar, that no American plane was involved in the incident, as some Iranian media initially reported. So, finally, from Fars News Agency, that's at farsnews.com, pilot says U.S. military's on board Falcon jet. Pilot of a Falcon jet, which was later forced to land down in an Iranian airport last Tuesday, had announced in its first radio contact with Iranian authorities that he had U.S. military's on board. And so, I'm sure we will see more coming out of that anytime you see relief agencies. My conspiratorial mind always thinks CIA front. Let's shift gears now, and I don't think we've played any clips or covered any of the latest shows or radio or videos or bullhorning or anything from my man Alex Ansari here in Portland, Oregon, host of Outside the Box, the television show on Portland Community Media and the radio show on We the People Radio Network, WTPRN.com, and his new show is on Oracle Broadcasting. So episodes 171 and 172 are up. They go over the bailout of the banks and its consequences, and of course, martial law preparations and civil unrest. He also had an interview with Michael Tesserion where they talked about ancient control structure that is behind the chaos seen in the modern world. And we also have a video of Alex Ansari driving around Portland in a VW bus bullhorning the masses.
It's all happening very quickly, and we all have front row seats. Let me say this in terms of the tension on the streets, the tension in the neighborhoods, the tension in the city, the tension in our nation, the tension in the world. We can't waste our time fighting one another, pointing the finger at one another. I'm sick of it. We don't have a lot of time left. It's a very sad situation. You go out to a restaurant, and you literally have your food almost dropped right in front of your lap. Is there anything else, sir? People are so rude when I go out and eat. And I work at a restaurant, too. And people are so rude to me as I pour their water, as they demand exactly how they want their food boxed up, probably wondering if this dark-skinned individual is some dirty Mexican across the border, came across the border, who hopefully, in their eyes, washed their hands. We become so alienated from each other. Men and women, men and men, women and women. It's like living in a nightmare in Portland. For me, at least. Walking down the streets, people looking down at the ground or looking more at their cell phone instead of making eye contact with yours truly. All I am is just another organic biological being walking through the southeast Portland streets. You can still feel the tension. You can still feel the misdirected fear. These people don't know what to fear or what to be concerned about. They just know that something's wrong and they're kind of operating on survival mode, locked within themselves. Do you think they are manufacturing this third world war, Michael?
Yeah, a lot of this is, you know, this is a media spin which is not new, and it is, you know, it's continually to create an ambiance of fear. And that doesn't mean, of course, that these people within the industrial military complex don't play war games, and they don't do these, you know, they need money, right? They want to justify their gigantic budgets. They always think that there's some enemy around the corner. But those people who come from the world I come from, the ones who study what goes on behind the scenes, a little bit more of the conspiratorial aspect, always come across the same information, the same evidence that shows that if there's an enemy out there, that enemy has been manufactured. It is not a legitimate enemy. What we're dealing with here is a geopolitical, you know, sort of game. And, of course, this is very difficult for people to swallow because, again, the traumatized mind is the furthest mind from being able to see reality. That's why my always message is to stop being traumatized, to not let yourself be traumatized, so that at least you have a chance of seeing something that, you know, you may not be seeing when you're frightened out of your wits. So what we're seeing here, you know, and this can be corroborated, the very rise of Russia from the time of the Bolsheviks was an experiment created from New York and from London. In fact, the leading Bolsheviks who created the Bolshevik Revolution and who set up the whole Soviet, system over there were sent out of the Bronx in New York and were funded by American and British money. So there's a perfect example. And my God, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. When you talk about these manufactured enemies, the real enemy is the human race. Over here, you've got the illumined one, and then you over here, you've got the rest of us. So when you start to see that all these other conflicts, and that doesn't mean that they don't involve bloodshed and all of that, of course they do, but these are things that are orchestrated by psychopaths who don't worry about a bit of bloodshed. In fact, they thrive on. The point being that all this stuff in the headlines, all this stuff that comes out of the media run by these Knights Templars, Knights of Malta, you know, Teutonic Knights, individuals who are like, you know, sunken in, totally involved with secret orders, secret fraternities. It's not even very hard to prove that, because it's from Henry Luce all the way to Conrad Black and so many others. They're involved with these secret societies that know exactly how to play the game.
We manufactured in 1929, and we'll manufacture this one in the chaos of this group. It's all by design. Problem reaction solution. It's an all day.
Now they're going to start selling off U.S. in chunks and pieces. Your land rights and acquisition, not only of the banks, but of your homes. It's going to continue. Foreclosure is more than just a home situation. It comes down to a city's private infrastructure. The banks, foreigners are buying all of it up because America is being looted. We are fascinated by the bubbles and shining lights and all the happy feelings and sensations that we get from living in the urban grid. But in reality, we are heading towards an economic crash. How do you think the black helicopters were in Portland several weeks ago? It was a martial law drill. They want us drugged. They want us drunk. They want us on pills. They want us watching their media. They want us reading their newspapers. They want us listening to their radio stations. They do not want us looking for the truth.
Words of wisdom, as always, from Alex Ansary. AlexAnsary.com, A-N-S-A-R-Y. And you also heard him talking to Michael Tesarian, T-S-A-R-I-O-N, and as he points out in a lot of his work, that of course all of this is basically a war on consciousness. Shifting gears again, as we get closer and closer to the release of Oliver Stone's new film W, some of the reviews are coming out as people have started to see it, and some of the film festivals have started to pick it up, and it's coming out really soon. I don't know the release date off the top of my head, but I think it's within the next week or so. First, from Variety, Stone's W is unusual and inescapably interesting. Oliver Stone's unusual and inescapably interesting W feels like a rough draft of a film it might behoove him to remake in 10 or 15 years. The director's third feature to hinge on a modern-era presidency after JFK and Nixon offers a clear and plausible take on the current chief executive's psychological makeup, and considering Stone's reputation and Bush's vast unpopularity, it's a relatively even-handed, restrained treatment of recent politics. For a film that could have either been a scorching satire or an outright tragedy, W is, if anything, overly conventional, especially stylistically. The picture possesses dramatic and entertainment value, but beyond serious filmgoers curious about how Stone deals with all this president's men and women, it's questionable how wide a public will pony up to immerse itself in a story that still lacks an ending.
I remember correctly, you didn't like the sporting goods job.
So what you want?
Come on, man!
Working in the investment firm wasn't for you either.
Or the oil rig job.
You didn't exactly finish up with flying colors in the Air National Guard, Junior.
Sit now.
What are you cut out for?
Partying, chasing tail, driving drunk?
I got it.
Oh! Who do you think you are?
A Kennedy?
You're a Bush. Act like one.
Want an ass whipping?
Try it, old man.
Go ahead, take a splint.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Finally, the official trailer from Oliver Stone's W, coming soon to a theater near you. But we've got another one from The Guardian, psychodrama of party animal turned president missing its final act. Finally, W. Oliver Stone's film about George Bush's life was revealed to the press ahead of its release to the public next week. Now, again, this is from the UK, so I don't know that it comes out here at the same time. Anyway, the film has all the elements of the best psychodramas: an overbearing father, a straight-talking mother, a favorite son-brother, and a cast of sycophants and true believers. But it is the true comedy, some of it very dark, that will stay in the minds of the audience. Bush, uncannily portrayed by Josh Brolin, saying Guantanamero instead of Guantanamo, comparing himself to Moses — he wasn't a very good speaker, Bush says, to explain his own call to politics, but he knew — and agreeing with Laura, his wife, that the musical Cats is one thing I'll stay up late for. But the film, its title, the initial of the president's middle name, Walker, plays like a TV movie rather than a cinematic epic, and it will not shift the political landscape ahead of the U.S. election on November 4th. Instead, it will reinforce the feelings of those who believe Bush was a dangerous incompetent, and provide ammunition to those on the other side of the political spectrum who prefer to worry about the bias of the liberal media. While JFK proved controversial for Stone's conspiratorial take on the Kennedy assassination, W. is far more conventional in its assessment. The core of the psychodrama is Bush's relationship with his domineering father, Poppy. As is his wont, Stone explains the battle between the two in stark terms. He has them fight an imaginary duel at the close of the film. Of necessity, a necessity probably provoked by the imminent election, the film, which was only begun in May, will be released before the end of the story. With W. still in office, the final act has yet to be written. Speaking of final acts, my friends, let's move in to a posting called A Hyped Up Atmosphere. Fear, of course, spelled F-E-A-R. And again, returning to the Army Combat Unit to deploy within the U.S., it did finally get picked up by CNN. The United States military's Northern Command, formed in the wake of 9/11, is dedicating a combat infantry team to deal with catastrophes in the U.S., including terrorist attacks and natural disasters. The 1st Brigade Combat Team of the 3rd Infantry, which was first into Baghdad, Iraq in 2003, started its controversial assignment on Wednesday, October 1st. The 1st Raiders will spend 2009 as the first active duty military unit attached to the U.S. Northern Command since it was created. They will be based in Fort Stewart, Georgia, and focus primarily on logistics and support for local police and rescue personnel. Now, another one from WarIsCrime.com. Army deploys its most bloodied combat unit inside the U.S. But we're going to move to an interview posted up on YouTube from Talking Stick TV. And it's an interview with Naomi Wolf. Now, we covered her previous book, The End of America, where she goes over the major points of fascism, which we are following to a T. Her new book is called Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries. And so here's an interview from October 4th on Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM in Seattle.
You know, I feel like kind of, I don't know, I feel like this is my one chance to alert America. This morning, I was told about this last night, and I couldn't believe it, the way you can't believe these things in America, but then check it out. Go to C-SPAN. Go to YouTube, type in Representative Brad Sherman and martial law. There is a clip on C-SPAN, which explains a lot, if it's true. But he's a Democratic representative from the 27th District, Sherman Oaks, Northridge, California. I have no reason to believe he's insane. And he is saying in private conversation, he's saying that the administration has hyped an atmosphere of crisis around the bailout. And I believe it, because looking at the language Bush is using, it's not to stabilize markets. It's, this is an emergency. Be afraid. It's coming to you. It's going to get worse and worse. This is not FDR language. This is the way you whip up agitated markets. It's not the way you calm them. And, you know, Sarah Palin, 20 times, we're in crisis mode, we're in crisis mode, we're in crisis mode. And he said, Representative Sherman said, that in private conversations, and he didn't name a subject, which makes sense. It was very brave of him to do this. He said, in private conversations, members have been told that if they didn't pass the bailout bill, they were the market was going to go down 1,000 points every day, and by Monday, he said, they would be facing martial law. They were threatened with martial law. He said several members in private conversations were threatened with martial law if they didn't do as he said. Now, why should we take this seriously? This is my other terrible piece of news, but we have to wake up. We have to wake up. On October 1st, the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry Division was deployed in the United States of America. For the first time since 1807, when a bright line was placed preventing military from policing American streets, a military brigade that's 3,000 to 4,000 soldiers has been brought in to police our street. Army Times reported it. Don't take my word for it. Now, why is this terrifying? Well, three things. What is the definition of a police state? A police state is when the leader has his own army on the street and his own treasury. Bear with me. The bailout bill had fine print that gave the president alone $100 billion in discretionary spending with no oversight. Who knows what the final bill looks like? We haven't seen the fine print. But I'm willing to bet you that there's, you know, an intervention by the president that gives him more power than he had before in the national economy. You see this always in a police state. The leader intervenes into the national economy and creates a chunk of that doesn't have adequate oversight or that empowers him further. The second thing you always see, the definition of a police state, is troops on the ground in civilian contexts. Now, why am I terrified by these troops? Why should I not be reassured that, oh, these are our guys and it's America? Here's why. If you look at the history of closing societies, what starts to happen, this happened in Italy in 1920, it happened in Germany in 1933. What starts to happen is it'll still be a democracy, but the president or the leader or the Führer will start to find a way to deploy military forces at his discretion. Now, these soldiers are not answerable to the Congress of the United States. They are answerable to the president of the United States. He is the commander-in-chief. That is the chain of command. That is the chain of command. So he can send these troops to your home. He can send these troops to outside voting booths. He can send them to protests. He can send them inside the halls of Congress, which is what both Mussolini and Hitler did when it was still a democracy, to intimidate legislators, as clearly they're starting to intimidate legislators. Bear with me. These troops, their mission, according to the Army Times, is crowd control, subduing unruly individuals, and responding in a potential emergency.
There's an accompanying article from Naomi Wolf. I don't know if I called her Naomi Klein before by accident. I get them mixed up. Naomi Klein, of course, of the Shock Doctrine. But here we are listening to Naomi Wolf, author of the new book, Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries. She has an article up on alternet.org. Thousands of U.S. troops are deployed on U.S. streets, ready to carry out crowd control. And if we hit up some of these last few under a hyped-up atmosphere, another from Tom Burghardt at globalresearch.ca, secret Bush admin plan to suspend U.S. Constitution. 10 months before 9/11, Secretary of Defense Ronald Rumsfeld approved an updated version of the U.S. Army's secret operational continuity of government plans. A draft document with a PDF download for you, published by the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks, entitled Army Regulation 500-3, Emergency Employment of Army and Other Resources, Army Continuity of Operations Program, COOP, or COOP, dated January 19, 2001, and it spelled out changes in the Army doctrine, issued by Headquarters, Department of the Army, and signed off by Rumsfeld and the Secretary of the Army. The document is affixed with a warning, destruction notice, destroy by any method that will prevent disclosure of contents or reconstruction of the document. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But if we move to an editorial from presidential candidate Chuck Baldwin, who also, I believe, will be in Portland the day after Ralph Nader. I think Chuck Baldwin is going to be here October 21st. And he, of course, as I noted on last night's 94B, Chuck Baldwin is the guy that Ron Paul ultimately endorsed. And I think more of a snub, a re-snub to Libertarian candidate Bob Barr, but yada yada. Chuck Baldwin has an article called U.S. Army to Serve as U.S. Police. And here's just a little chunk. To understand my concern for this new Homeland Army Brigade, it is important that we rehearse the principles of liberty as they relate to standing armies. One of America's most sacred principles has always been that the U.S. military was never to be used for domestic law enforcement. The fear of standing armies ran very deep in the hearts and minds of America's founders. The tyranny and misery inflicted upon the colonies by British troops weighed heavily on those who drafted our Constitution and Bill of Rights. In their minds, the American people would never again be subjected to the heavy weight of army boots. Furthermore, they insisted that America would have a civilian, not military, government. And after the fiasco of the abuse of federal troops in the South following the war between the states, or the Civil War, pardon me, the doctrine of posse comitatus was enacted into law. But in 2006, President George W. Bush pushed a Republican-controlled Congress to pass the John Warner National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2007, which included a section titled Use of the Armed Forces in Major Public Emergencies. This section provided that, quote, the president may employ the armed forces to restore public order in any state of the United States the president determines. In effect, that bill obliterated posse comitatus. And again, I believe I noted that, it was 50 governors. So, unless you're going by Barack Obama's 57 states in the country, that's all 50 governors of all 50 states of the U.S. signed a paper saying, hey, this John Warner Defense Authorization Act takes states' power away. And so on many, many, many fronts, my friends, I believe we're heading into amazing constitutional crises, to say the least. But let's wrap up a hyped up atmosphere with an interesting, bizarre, scary, funny note. This from the BBC. Speaking of themselves, BBC nuclear bomb script released. A script written by the BBC and the government to be broadcast in the event of a nuclear attack has been published. The script, with a PDF download for you, written in the 1970s and released by the National Archives, included instructions to stay calm and stay in your homes. Which kind of sounds like the bit we played from Jello Biafra a couple weeks ago. It said communications had been disrupted and the number of casualties and extent of damage were not known. Other papers revealed debates about how to ensure the person reading the script was authoritative and comforting. So the script was discussed from 1973 to 1975 during the Cold War. Now, in an interesting note, and again, that's what makes this even more funny, is that the BBC had Harry Shearer, Spinal Tap, Simpsons, Mr. Burns, all those things. Here's Harry Shearer reading the newly released BBC nuke script.
I'm Harry Shearer, and this is the BBC nuclear statement to be used in the wake of a nuclear attack from 25 years ago, being read in the style of the great American newscaster of the era, Walter Cronkite, who was at the time the most trusted man in America.
This country has been attacked with nuclear weapons. Communications have been severely disrupted, and the number of casualties and the extent of the damage are not yet known. We will bring you further information as soon as possible. Meanwhile, stay tuned to this wavelength. Stay calm and stay in your own home. Remember, there is nothing to be gained by trying to get away. By leaving your homes, you could be exposing yourselves to greater danger. If you leave, you may find yourself without food, without water, without accommodation, and without protection. Radioactive fallout which follows a nuclear explosion is many times more dangerous if you're directly exposed to it in the open. Roofs and walls offer substantial protection.
So that's Harry Shearer of Spinal Tap and Simpsons fame reading the newly released BBC nuke script from the 70s. And that, of course, reminds me, you should definitely check out on archive.org, The Day Called X. But that's going to do it, my friends. But there's still news to go over, but we've run out of time, thereby ensuring a B-side of episode 95. I foolishly thought we were going to be able to get through all the news, but there's still stuff about U.S. officials stopping planes to kill bin Laden repeatedly, some updates on a UK top cop who committed suicide. We've also got the UK police training for riot scenarios and Germany trying to change their constitution to allow domestic military deployment. We, of course, have panic, plunges, and Goldman gangsters. And it's interesting to note, of course, that Paulson, former Goldman exec, now Treasury Secretary, has appointed a Goldman exec to be in part of the Treasury's bailout disbursement. The hilarious part is that his name is Neil Kashkari. Kashkari, which of course makes you instantly think of cash and carry. We've also got a dangerous move for NORAD, relocating facilities fraught with security risks. That's from the Washington Times. And we have geopolitics, drug wars, radar, and private military. Paulson and private contractors to hand out the bailout billions, Goldman gangsters, Mukasey and Mueller power grab, informants, spies, and lies. And funnily enough, Pompey Bush rocking his Bohemian Grove owl ball cap. So you're going to have to check out episode 95B of MediaMonarchy.com. As you may know, if you're a regular listener of MediaMonarchy.com, at the end of each episode, I like to run down a quick list of some of the interesting visitors to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. If you use a hit counter on your website, I use statcounter.com. It lets you look at some of the traffic that's visiting your website. And when you're dealing with news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, you get some interesting visitors. So, in the past week, we had the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, hit me up from blacklistednews.com, as did Lucent Technologies out of New York City. We also had General Electric Googling Bruce Willis says New World Order. That's, of course, referencing his Vanity Fair interview where he says the guys that killed Kennedy are still in power right now. We had the DOD Network Information Center out of Alexandria, Virginia, Google black helicopters over Denver. Merck, our big pharma friends out of Charlotte, North Carolina, Googled Freemasons, Merck. We had NBC Universal out of Universal City, California. We had the Royal Bank of Scotland. They Googled monarchy plus news plus Italy and got more than they bargained for. Colorado State University Googled Ewan Cameron memory thief. And you can, of course, hit up those videos. It's posted up on MediaMonarchy.com. Ewan Cameron, the memory thief, CIA mind control. Vermont Department of Libraries out of Burlington, Vermont, Googled New World Order media deprogramming. The Xerox Corporation out of San Francisco hit me up from my link on whatreallyhappened.com, reading, of course, about Barry Jennings. Sony Pictures Digital out of Madison, Wisconsin, Googled Florida electronic voting. The General Motors Corporation from Warren, Michigan, hit me up. The Oregon Health and Science University, OHSU, out of Portland, Googled Portland, Oregon. They misspelled their own state name. Plus, the next terror attack, 2008. Tulsa World Publishing out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, Googled Chuck Norris, 9/11 Truth. United States Army Headquarters out of Massillon, Ohio, reading about Cyberstorm 2. Sony Pictures Entertainment out of Culver City, California, Googled America's Next Beauty Queen. Adventist Health Systems out of Hinsdale, Illinois, Googled Martial Law 2008. USA elections will be canceled. Merck, again, out of Woodbridge, New Jersey. They were hitting me up. I got a link from a German website that brought hundreds and hundreds of hits to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. It's on shortnews.de. They all picked up on former CIA operative Robert Bayer. Of course Bin Laden's dead. We had our friends at NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Google News, Boulder, O'Brien, Plutonium. And just today we had the Detroit County Day School out of Southfield, Michigan, Google Vibrant Response. That was, of course, the terror drill that the guys that are now the combat brigades on the streets were going through before they were assigned to NORTHCOM. General Dynamics out of Fairfax, Virginia, Googled FEMA, SAIC. And finally, the American Philatetic Society out of Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, were reading about the 75th anniversary of the Reichstag fire. You remember the false flag event that let a corrupt leader sweep to power? Now, of course, I did actually have to look up what philatelic is. P-H-I-L-A-T-E-L-I-C. That means stamp collecting. I had no idea. It's all about learning new things on MediaMonarchy.com. So once again, my friends, I thank you for joining me here at least once a week on MediaMonarchy.com. This has been episode 95, October 10th, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. So hit me up, catch me up, MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, and Skype with Media Monarchy as your keyword, and we'll keep doing it, and we'll keep getting through this, my friends. Like Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.